FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
This episode of the Financial Survival Network is brought to you in part by Sandstorm Gold Royalties. Sandstorm Gold Royalties is a different kind of gold company. They purchase royalties on select mining operations and receive a percentage of the revenue in return. Sandstorm now has a portfolio of over 185 gold royalties around the world. See how gold royalties differ from other gold mining investments at sandstormgold.com. That's sandstormgold.com. Sandstorm Gold Royalties trades on the TSX as SSL and on the New York Stock Exchange American as SAND.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's 129.19. As always, we invite you to be part of the show. Email us kl@kerrylutz.com. Well, funny thing happened. I was in Vancouver at a couple of conferences. A friend of mine there was complaining that she has to pay $37, that's 37 Canadian, which comes out to about 30 bucks US monthly for her medical costs. The only province in Canada that actually pays a direct fee for medical costs. Well, is this a viable system? Because this is what Kamala Harris wants you to have, kind of a Medicare for all. Well, our good friend Sally Pipes is with us again. And Sally, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you, Kerry. Delighted to be back.
And if you want to find Sally's work, go over to pacificresearch.org. So Sally, she's complaining about $37, but in reality, she's paying a hidden tax far greater.
Well, exactly. And I think what people need to realize is that while she may be paying $37 a month, BC is the only province that is doing this. But it's irrelevant because under Medicare for All, where all private health insurance in Canada is banned, except for a few private clinics that are, you know, being sued, such as Brian Day's Cambie Surgery. His court case has been going on for over 3 years, trying to get legitimacy for his private clinic, and the BC government is suing him. So for her to pay $37, it's irrelevant because the average wait in Canada, including British Columbia, from seeing a primary care doctor to getting treatment by a specialist is 19.8 weeks. That's roughly 5 months. Oh. And the older you are, the more your care is going to be rationed. So $37 a month, you know, is nothing. The average family in Canada pays $13,000 a year in hidden taxes for their health care, where they have to sit on a waiting list and care is rationed and there's a shortage of doctors.
So this is something that our good senator there, Kamala Harris, really isn't talking about. She's looking at the Canadian system with envy, and yet, you know, things are not always what they appear to be, are they?
Well, no. I mean, Kamala, who is the California senator, the other senator in California, she was one of the early signers on to Bernie Sanders' 2017 SB 1804, the true single-payer health care bill that he fostered, and who, where there is no private health care allowed at all, no private insurance. So she is now, you know, announced on Martin Luther King Day that she would be seeking the Democratic nomination for president. And she's running around giving speeches and being interviewed by the, Mr. Trump would say, the fake news outlets. And she said last night that she vows to get rid of private health care plans. Let's eliminate all of that. Let's move on. But she doesn't talk, just like Bernie Sanders, how much is this going to cost? How is it going to be paid for? And what does a Canadian system really mean for Canadians? And Bernie and Kamala's plans are actually even more comprehensive than the Canadian plans, where you have these long waits, because they include dental care, vision care, and free pharmaceuticals. And Canada's plan doesn't cover any of those things, and you still have these huge waits, high taxes, and doctor shortages.
So we saw the after effects of Obamacare. It doesn't look like Congress really wants to do very much to change things. It looks like Trump is stymied. He's making administrative changes. putting in associations that, you know, affinity groups you can buy your health insurance coverage from. We'll see exactly what that, what good that's going to do. What is going to happen here, Sally?
Well, I mean, as you made reference to, I mean, when Donald Trump was running as our as the Republican candidate, and he did win the presidency, and the Republicans took the, kept the Senate and the House, they had everything, and they promised to repeal and replace Obamacare. By the fall of 2017, they hadn't accomplished that, and so we still have Obamacare. Interestingly, as you mentioned, I mean, two rules were signed and are in effect. One is the short-term limited duration plans, which allow an individual to buy a plan for 12 months, renewable for up to 3 years, and they're not subject to, these plans are not subject to the 10 essential health benefits that Obamacare has. The second rule is the association health plans, where sole proprietors and small groups can band together across state lines and buy coverage. And in effect, they should be able to get a plan that's more comprehensive and less expensive. The third point is that on January 1st of this year, the individual mandate was eliminated, which was part of the tax reform legislation of December 2017. So, you know, a couple of things have happened, but, you know, right now the Democrats, you know, control the House, and they're talking a lot about single payer, whether it's Pramila Jayapal, who's chair of the House Medicare for All caucus, Julian Castro. There's a lot of people out there at the state level, city level, like Mayor of New York, Bill de Blasio, all talking about single payer. But nothing, in fact, can happen because the Republicans have the presidency and the Senate. But there's a lot of buildup now for the 2020 campaign. And it seems that the 2020 campaign is already in motion because of what's happening at the state. I mean, New York State, Mayor Cuomo has already gone ahead. I mean, not New York, in California, the new Governor Newsom, Democrat, where he controls with a supermajority, the Democrats control the Assembly and the Senate. He has asked President Trump if California, if he would give a waiver so California could introduce a single payer plan. Well, I don't think Trump will ever do that. But this is a huge issue where the American people need to be educated quickly about what single payer Medicare for All, no private insurance means. Because, you know, right now we're seeing about 56% of people polled in the latest Kaiser poll support single payer, and 42% oppose. But when they say healthcare is a right, 71% support it. But when you say we'll have to pay higher taxes, such as in Canada, that drops to 37%. And of the 77% who are aware that they have to pay, would have to pay more in taxes, 55% of those people think that they can keep their employer-sponsored coverage. About 170 million Americans have their employer-sponsored coverage, and they like it. And they're unclear that this would all be eliminated, just as Kamala Harris said, you know, we'll get rid of private health care plans.
That's a really kind of distressing. I mean, I don't buy into so much the those numbers, the surveys, because it all depends how you ask the question. Probably saying, if you could get the most fantastic health care coverage in the world, better than any insurance plan out there, and the government paid for it, much as they do for Medicare, would you want that? And of course, everybody's going to say yes. So the no doubt these surveys are stacked, they're agenda driven, they mean nothing. But I don't doubt for a moment, Sally, that there are a number of people out there who don't understand the whole thing and really think that they can get a free lunch at our expense.
Exactly. And they, you know, I mean, I find it incredible that those people that hold that say, you know, that they like this Medicare for All idea. Of course, as I say, I mean, 55% of those of people think they can keep their coverage. But, you know, if they think about it, I mean, the government would be the sole supplier. Now, think about the post office. What do the American people think about the post office? There's a reason why FedEx, DHL, and UPS are doing so well because people don't want to just have the government-run post office. So they want that for their health care, which is far more important than perhaps having a letter delivered. So it really, and there was a new poll that came out last week also from NORC and the University of Chicago, and their poll showed that 46% of the people they polled had never heard of Medicare for All. So this is interesting. 40% had heard something about it, and 13% said they'd heard a lot about it. But so, you know, I really think that, if you say, the poll numbers really are dependent upon how the questions are asked. But right now, I mean, you know, with Kamala Harris, Bernie Sanders, all of these people, they're really raising the temperature for Medicare for All. And, you know, people, for anyone would think, would you like something for free? Of course, they're going to say, I'd like free health care, I'd like free housing, I'd like free college education. But it has to be paid for. And as the Urban Institute, which is not a conservative think tank, and the Mercatus Center, which is, came out and costed Bernie's plan, because he wouldn't say what it would cost, at $32 trillion over 10 years, $3.2 trillion a year, which is what we spend on healthcare in this country today. And of course, that would mean higher taxes, but care will have to be rationed and there will be long waiting lists. You know, in the UK right now, under the National Health Service, that which Britain does allow private coverage, and about 10% of Brits have it. But of those people, most people are under the NHS. 4.3 million Brits are on waiting lists. Surgeries are being canceled all the time. There's a shortage of 100,000 healthcare providers between doctors, nurses, and people that work in the hospitals. These are things that the American people need to know, because this is what would happen if the government fully took over our healthcare system. And that would be assuming the Democrats win the presidency, take the Senate and the House in 2020 and the inauguration in 2021. But we have a lot of work to do to educate people.
And presuming that they could have 60 votes in the Senate, or that the Republicans would just fold at that point like they did under Obama, although they did keep a unified front with the passage of Obamacare. But I'm not so sure that they would anymore. Obamacare is the law of the land. It's settled law, as Obama used to like to say, just like climate change is settled science. But the one thing we can say is the costs are settled economics, and they've been staggering, and it's been it's resulted in withholding of care of people, of you not being able to afford to see a doctor or get a procedure done because your deductible and your copay are so high. So it's really put every American into the medical insurance business, because you are effectively self-insured for up to the combined amount of your deductible, your copay, and whatever limits are in the policy, as well as that thing called balance billing, which Obamacare legalized, which is a travesty.
Well, exactly. And, you know, I mean, when Obama, you know, when he was a senator in Illinois, he supported single payer and said that in many speeches. When he became the president and was working on the Affordable Care Act, he was against single payer, saying, you know, his Obamacare was to supplement employer-sponsored coverage because people like their employer-based coverage. Then last year, of course, when he's not the president, he's set back to supporting single-payer health care. But remember, he promised the American people they would see their average premium go down by $2,500. If they like their doctor and they like their insurance, they would be able to keep it. Well, that's not the case. And, you know, we've overturned the whole healthcare system for Obamacare, which, as you say, is still the law of the land. For starting this year, about 8 million people are on exchange coverage. Last year, it was 10. At the height of the law, only 11 million people were covered, you know, on the exchanges. A lot of the young people didn't want to pay very high premiums, high deductibles that they couldn't afford, and have small networks of doctors and hospitals. And so we overturned the healthcare system for this very small number of people. You know, it would have been so much easier to set up the high risk pools, as Dr. Tom Price, when he was in the House, said, and Paul Ryan said, so that the states could provide significant funding to each of the states to cover those people with pre-existing conditions, and that they wouldn't have to. And there are only about 8 million of those people.
Right.
Most of the people with pre-existing work and employer coverage.
Correct. And we've found from various healthcare experiments around the country that even those people with pre-existing conditions, chronic conditions, things like diabetes and all sorts of other diseases that are chronic, that they can be managed much more efficiently and effectively through other means. And let's not forget also, Sally, that really Obamacare became Obamacade because the majority of people covered under Obamacare are on Medicaid now throughout the various states. And the federal government was picking up the tab for that for a little while, but I think this year it's over. The states have to pick up the tab for that expanded Medicaid program, which is going to lead to all sorts of dislocations, problems, higher prices for insured patients as well.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you know, under Obamacare, the states could not be forced. The Supreme Court said the states could not be forced to expand their plans, but about 38 in D.C. did in this past election. There were some initiatives passed in Utah and I think Nebraska that would allow expansion, but the full 100% Fed coverage of the expansion cost goes down to 90% next year. But even more interesting is with all of these, now we have 73 million Americans covered on Medicaid. But the problem is that a lot of doctors will not take patients who are on Medicaid mm-hmm. because the reimbursement rates are even lower than the 40% that they get paid for treating patients on Medicare. So right. emergency room use is up, which was a whole one of the main ideas behind President Obama saying he wanted to reduce healthcare costs. And if people stopped going to emergency rooms because they had Medicaid or exchange coverage, it would be better. But that's not the case. ER use is up because these people on Medicaid, people who earn below 137% of the federal poverty level, cannot find a doctor.
Yeah, and there's so many other things. We could go on like this for days talking about the issues.
Right.
And look, one benefit, I guess, to Obamacare is people, because your deductible is so high, because your copay is so high, you have become a better consumer of medical services. And just January 1st, all of the hospitals have to publish their rates for everything online and justify them. So we can't say Obamacare was horrible across the board. Yes, it's generally awful, the results, but it did a couple of things right, and we're seeing them come to the forefront now.
Right. Yes, exactly. Well, it's going to be a very, very interesting 2019 and 2020 up until November, because this issue, the healthcare issue, is front and center in every news release every day.
Yeah. Hey, well, all I know, Sally, is in a few years I'll be on Medicare and I won't have to care about it, but I'm hoping there still is a Medicare.
Well, you know, most of a large percentage of people on Medicare, of course, buy top-up plans and are also, you know, to supplement so that their doctor will keep them, or they're on Medicare Advantage, which, of course, neither of these are free.
Mm-hmm. Very true. Very true. It affects us all, and just some more than others, especially you're a young family. You got like the bronze plan. You have like $20,000 out of pocket. God forbid anybody gets ill. That could be catastrophic. You know, I remember when they were passing it, they said it's going to reduce the number of medical-induced bankruptcies. And to some extent, that was true for a while, but I don't think it's going to last. Do you?
No, because middle-class families cannot afford, you know, to cover a deductible of $12,000 a year before their insurance kicks in.
Mm-hmm. Look, I remember in New York for a while, and we'll kind of wrap it up, that you could opt for a high deductible plan for a $10,000 deductible. And I never did it, but my friend was a doctor, so he got a lot of professional courtesy back in those days. And the cost of the plan was about a third of what I was paying for my health insurance. And then New York State said, oh no, we can't have this. We can't have high deductible plans. They have to be banned, and they ended them. And really, that was a good solution for many people out there, many of you out there. Having the high deductible plan could make the difference between being able to afford insurance and not being able to afford it.
And that's what insurance is all about. And so, you know, you're absolutely right. And a lot of young, healthy people, you know, would buy coverage, which I'm hoping will happen under the short-term limited duration plans, because they can buy coverage to cover a catastrophe if should that happen. It probably won't, but in some cases it will.
Exactly. Hey, Sally, really appreciate you coming on. And the place where we find you is pacificresearch.org. And your book is also available there, The False Promise of Single-Payer Healthcare, which really now is more relevant than ever with all of this political nonsense and hype going on. Get the true story on what single payer will do. It'll turn us into Canada or the UK. Last thing we need. Hey, any questions or comments for Sally, myself, KL@KerryLutz. That's the email address. The Twitter feed's @KerryLutz. The Facebook page, Financial Survival Network. Sally, really appreciate you coming on again.
Okay, thank you, Kerry, very much. Take care.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.